This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9. Bent Notes is our weekly jazz program going to air each Sunday night.
My guest on Bent Notes is leader of a trio, but it's a trio with a difference. Instead of drums and bass, it has two saxes and then the guitar. Most commonly used as a vehicle of rhythm, it's used in this band as the voice of melody. The trio is called Antilotic, came together at a time when each member had a very young family, and one of their limitations was to maintain a sense of calm and quiet around their babies. They achieved this with their first album back in 2017. It was called Quiet Sufficient. They have just launched their second album earlier this year called To Iceland, To Iceland. It's my great pleasure to wish a very warm welcome back to Bent Notes, the leader of Antilotic, Robbie Melville. Welcome, Robbie.
Thank you, David. Nice to be back. Thanks for having me.
Let's go back to the very beginning, Robbie. Where did music start for you? Was it in the family, at school?
My sister, I remember, had piano lessons just down the road, and I remember walking down with my mum one afternoon to pick her up, and I caught the last 5 minutes of her lesson. I was quite spellbound, so on the way home I said, "Could I have piano lessons too, mummy?"
Really?
Yeah.
What was it that attracted your attention?
I don't know. It just looked like fun. You sort of put your finger down and a sound came out.
How old would you have been at that time, Robbie?
I think maybe 7 or 8 or around there. I'm not sure.
A good age to be caught into music.
Yeah. And there was always, you know, a lot of music around the house. My mum listened to, you know, when she played piano, you know, and we had this beach house that we shared with another family, and that was my introduction into Louis Armstrong and Billie Holiday and a lot of that early jazz.
What a great way to go.
Yeah.
What was the defining moment when you realised that music was going to be much more than just a bit of a hobby at home?
I think probably I finished school and went to university and was really just stooging around and not doing very well, but practicing guitar a lot. And I think I was sort of towards the end of the course where I suddenly realized that I was spending all my time practicing guitar, and maybe that's what I should really be focusing on.
Was it a difficult decision to change to guitar?
No, not at all. I started playing guitar when I was about 14 or 15. So I gave up the piano. I'd been learning double bass too.
Oh, right.
And I gave them both up. My next door neighbor had a guitar, a classical guitar, that I borrowed, and I think I put steel strings on it like a chump because I didn't know what I was doing. I just played that for quite a while, and then my parents bought me a real guitar for Christmas, maybe when I was 15 or something.
What was your view then of where music was going to take you? Did you have a thought in your mind, this is where I'm going to go?
Not really. Mainly I was just trying to figure out how the thing worked. I didn't have a lesson until I was in my early 20s, I think. I was really just exploring it and found the whole thing fascinating. So I wasn't really thinking about, you know, where can this take me or what sort of music will I write or any of that. I was more just going, oh, that's an interesting sound. What happens if I do this now?
You were discovering lots of interesting things.
Yeah, absolutely.
What career did lose out when you took up guitar?
That's a long story. I went there to study archaeology. I'd taken on philosophy as well, just as another subject. And
what a combination.
Yeah.
So you ended up with philosophy and music.
Yeah, and then I dropped the philosophy too.
How do you describe yourself as a musician? Some people describe themselves as jazz musicians, others as classical musicians. Where would you put yourself?
I don't really like the boxes, but I guess they're convenient. I'd probably call myself a jazz musician simply because of my interest in improvisation, and I play jazz sometimes. you know, maybe I'd call myself an improvising musician. Yeah, but I don't consider myself to be, you know, really a sort of swinging classic jazz kind of guitarist.
As a composer, what do you look for before you put the pen to paper, or is that finger to the keyboard or plectrum to the string, I wonder? What is it that comes into your mind when you think, I'm going to compose something?
Well, actually, last night I composed a piece. I haven't done any writing for quite a while now, but something sort of came out last night where I was just thinking, I'm thinking a lot about textures at the moment, actually, when I'm writing. Just blending of just what makes interesting blends of instruments, and how much can I get from, you know, just from a few notes, like how far can I take just a few notes and the accompanying space.
And it's the space that's important, isn't it?
Oh, so important. Yeah. It's fundamental, you know, particularly to the kind of music I'm attracted to has a lot of it. If I hear music that you know, doesn't really have any space, and that I don't mean it has to be sort of gentle and relaxed. I'm also talking about stuff that is kind of high intensity. It still needs a space for me to keep on listening.
When you're composing, do you write for a group of performers that you know? Do you write just for an instrumentation that you like, or do you just write something and then work out who's going to play it later?
Mostly it's geared towards the people I'm playing with and ensembles I'm working with. I put together an ensemble called the Smallcastra with Ronnie Farella and classical cellist Zoe Knighton and Tamara Murphy and Gideon Brazil and Adam Simmons. And we had one rehearsal. We had our first rehearsal, and then the virus came along. Yeah. So that was my, you know, latest and greatest project. So I've most of the writing I've done this year has been for that. So that's what I'm thinking about, I guess, before I'd start writing. But also I'm enjoying writing for solo guitar, which is something I've always struggled with, really, how to present a whole piece just on the guitar and keep it, you know, keep it interesting, especially if you just limit yourself to, you know, say just a steel string guitar for 10 songs. I mean, how are you going to keep the listener engaged?
And what's the secret?
I don't know. I think the secret is contrast. You know, contrast in, you know, dynamics within a song, but contrast between the pieces and the way you approach them, and also exploring the guitar as a, you know, there are so many different ways to use a guitar that aren't necessarily just the melodic ones. You know, it's got a whole range of, let's call them extended techniques or whatever, but, you know, you can pull a lot of sounds out of the guitar that aren't necessarily, that people don't think of when they think of music.
Before we chat further about the Antilotic Trio and the brand new album, To Iceland, To Iceland, I reckon we should hear a piece of music. Is there a favourite that you have on the album?
Well, I quite like Blue Tongue Band. So that's a piece about, I grew up in Warrandyte, and there was this little quite secret swimming hole down at Blue Tongue Bend that I spent many summers with my friends down there, and one in particular, my next door neighbour. We'd just be down there all the time, and we had a boom box had a tape in it with, I think it was the Best of the Animals on one side and a Joe Cocker album on the other side.
Oh, what a batch of music to be playing out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, and that's you know, all we listen to. I just have really very good memories of all the time I spent there. You know, and the longer we were there, the more it sort of got discovered. So, you know, this is in the 80s, mid-late 80s. you know, I went down there a couple of years ago and it's everybody knows about it.
Well, let's have a listen to Blue Tongue Bend from Antelodic and To Iceland, To Iceland, the brand new album. My special guest is Robbie Melville, guitarist, composer and leader of the jazz trio Antelodic. You're listening to Bent Notes on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Find more Joycasts and show blogs, go to joy.org.au.
You're listening to Bent Notes on Joy 94.9, where my special guest is Robbie Melville, guitarist, composer and leader of the jazz trio Antelodic. Robbie, the music of Antelodic to me is warm and it's relaxed, and I reckon it gives a real sense of enveloping you in that warmth and relaxation when you just sit back and listen without being doing other things at the same time. And yet the title of your brand new album, To Iceland, To Iceland, gives me a sense of more urgency. Where did the title come from and how has it influenced the compositions on the album?
Well, the title is an anagram of the word Antelodic, which in itself doesn't mean anything. But I had this very strange experience when I came up with a bunch of these anagrams. I just sat down making anagrams out of Antelodic because, well, it's a good way to generate song titles. I came up with Two Icelands, and I wrote a piece that day, this short piece, and then I went to work. I was teaching in a music shop. When I got there was this really beautiful piece of choral music on and that my boss was listening to on YouTube, and I said, well, you know, what is that? And it was this Icelandic hymn, and I was like, wow, that's pretty funny, and I love the piece of music, so I thought maybe we could do that in Antelodic, do an arrangement. I did my teaching, and I got home, my wife opened the door, and she had this book of Icelandic sagas. She's like, I just got this, I thought you might be interested.
Oh.
And I was like, wow.
Did you have a strange feeling at that point in time?
Yeah, I thought that's pretty bonkers. That's a whole lot of coincidence, so I'm just going to keep rolling with that. I thought, okay, the album's going to have something to do with Iceland, clearly. But, you know, but over the more I thought about the whole title and everything, you know, the more it came to sort of represent our journey as a trio and as musicians, just trying to, you know, we're always trying to get somewhere, and whenever we think we've gotten there, it, you know, it shifts further away, and Iceland is just about the furthest away place I can think of. So you know, it became a good metaphor for the trio as well.
It is, in a sense, it's a journey.
Yeah, very much so.
Not necessarily the journey to Iceland as in the country, but it's a journey of the band.
Yeah.
When you put the pieces together, thinking about this journey, did you have a specific plan before you started to put them in place?
Not really. We finished the first album and we'd done some touring and we weren't officially taking any time off, but we weren't really doing anything, and I was sort of vaguely thinking about the next step. And then a close friend of mine died and I wrote a few pieces about that, and that kind of experience kind of kicked off, you know, started us down the road to the next album, because I wanted to express what I was dealing with there, but also, you know, when somebody close dies and you realize how fragile everything is and how lucky you are to be here and how actually wonderful things can be. So I wanted to represent that on the album as well. So not just have the whole album as melancholy kind of expression, but something with joy as well.
It makes for a very pleasurable listening experience as you go up and down.
Good. I hope so.
Yeah.
Once again, you know, a contrast. Like there needs to be contrast, and you know, our instrumentation is quite limiting. So
now it is a little unusual because normally you think, oh, you're going to have piano, bass, and drums, and maybe a sax or a trumpet lead. But you have a guitar, being yourself, and then you've got two saxes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, the whole thing was an experiment that we just worked and worked at until we could make it work. because when we tried it out, it really didn't work. But I guess there was enough. We could see some sort of possibility with it, enough to, you know, keep chasing the possibility of it.
Until you found the mix that actually worked.
Yeah, which took a few years. And, I mean, all the early stuff is all, it's just written. There was not really any improvisation or anything, which is what we wanted, but we sort of didn't know how to deal with it with the constraints we had. But the more we've played it, you know, we've sort of relaxed into it now, and we know how to, I guess, stretch the pieces and bend them to our will
and make it work.
Yeah.
So you've got Gideon Brazil, tenor and baritone saxes,
Monty McKenzie on alto.
You've played with them for many years before putting Antilotic together, hadn't you?
Yeah, I've been playing with Monty for 20 years, I think. And Gideon, I met Gideon not long after I met Monty. Yeah, it's been a while now.
So it wasn't as if you were coming into the trio cold. You knew the musos. It was just a case of working out how the instrumentation was going to give you what you were after.
Yeah, and, you know, we all like a challenge, I guess.
Good to have a challenge. I think that challenge has succeeded. You had a tour plan for launching the album, but of course that had to be cancelled, as you mentioned before. Is it something that you've still got on your plans at some stage once lockdown has gone?
Yeah, I was just talking to Gideon about that the other day. So I think when we're able to move about freely, we will definitely tour, but we might have to scale back the plans somewhat. Mm. I don't know what it will look like at this stage. But, you know, and a lot of that depends on venues and...
Well, it does indeed.
...ability to travel, and I'm in the dark like everyone else.
There are so many impacts to the industry at this stage, and there are no answers to those questions that everyone wants answered. I've just noticed that Julian Wilson wrote your liner notes, and he made a beautiful little comment where he said, "There's plenty of intrigue, but always room to breathe."
Yes.
I think that's a wonderful, wonderful description of what is in the music, because there's that warmth, that relaxation, but I think he's right. The word intrigue does cover off some of the content of the music, and yet you've got the space there so that you can listen and think, what's happening here? And then you've got the chance to breathe.
I like to think, you know, if you just have the music on in the background, it's kind of nice. But if you do sit and have a close listen to it, I think there's a lot of detail and interesting little turns going on here and there.
There are indeed. Mm. The album is called To Iceland, To Iceland. It's available on Bandcamp, so bandcamp.com, and search for Antilotic. And there's also the original album there on Bandcamp, Quite Sufficient. Robbie, you also have your own website, robbiemelville.com, which is full of interesting information too.
It's also available digitally through the ABC, Apple Music, and all the usual digital suspects. I don't know. I don't buy music that way, so.
I still like CDs.
Yeah, so do I.
If I place an order on Bandcamp, it's going to be for the CD version wherever possible, because I like to have something to touch and to feel and to hold and to look at and to read. It's just the only way to go.
Yeah, I'm with you. And that album has some great photography too.
Oh, I love the picture on the front.
Yeah, that's from an Icelandic photographer at the turn of the century. All of those photos are by the same guy, which I managed to obtain through Cornell University and the Reykjavik Institute of Photography.
Well, they are superb photos because they really do build on the Iceland part of the story. They're absolutely magnificent. Robbie, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me here on Bent Notes tonight. I'm looking forward to playing much more from the album here on Bent Notes. I'm also looking forward to the next release from Antilodic, whenever that might come out.
It's a while away, but we have plans.
Oh, excellent. But I reckon we might go out with a piece off the album called No Citadel. Any story about No Citadel?
It's really a piece. Once again, it's No Citadel is an anagram of Antilodic.
How many hours did you spend working these out, Robbie?
It's not that long. Oh. I just sit in the lounge room and do it sometimes when I'm bored. There are plenty more.
Maybe that's the new challenge for us all in isolation, to sit down with the word Antilodic and find out how many anagrams we can find.
Yeah, send me your results. That piece and there are two other pieces on the album. They're all the same piece, but it's three very different arrangements. And it's just about the experience of being in Antilodic with Gideon and Monty. You know, just it's about friendship, really, I guess.
It's a nice way to look at it, indeed. And on that note, Robbie, thanks for taking the time to chat with me here on Bent Notes. As I said, looking forward to playing more music and looking forward to chatting with you again sometime in the future.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's great. Thank you for your support.
A pleasure indeed. My special guest has been Robbie Melville, guitarist, composer, and leader of the jazz trio Antilodic. You're listening to Bent Notes on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.